Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to tonight's Nutrition and MS teleconference. All parties are currently in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, a question-and-answer session will be conducted at the moderator's discretion. At that time, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press 7 only once on your telephone keypad. I would now like to turn the conference over to Heather Adams.
Good evening. My name is Heather Adams, and I am a Programs and Services Manager at the Alabama-Mississippi Chapter of the National MS Society, and tonight we're going to be having our Nutrition and MS teleconference with our special guest, April Towery. April is a 1999 graduate of Auburn University with a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition and Food Science. She's a 2001 graduate of the University of Alabama at Birmingham with a Master of Science in Clinical Nutrition. She's currently employed at St. Vincent's Hospital, which is in Birmingham, as a PRN instructor with the Wellness Services Department, where she serves as a weight management consultant and dietitian. And I'm going to turn this over to April and let her talk to y'all for a little bit. And at the end of it, there'll be a question and answer session, so anything that pops up in your mind, you can ask April about. So I'm going to turn this over to her now. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Heather. As she said, my name is April Towery, and I'm a dietitian here in Birmingham. And I'll probably be talking for about 20 to 30 minutes, and then we'll just feel free to ask any questions afterwards, and I'll do my best to answer you. So if you think of a question along the way, you might just want to write it down or make a little point so that you'll remember your questions. But I really wanted to talk tonight about pretty much just two main discussion topics regarding nutrition and MS. One of those being the National MS Society recommendations, and then I also wanted to spend some time talking about osteoporosis just because of its prevalence in the MS population. So those are going to be our two main discussion points tonight. To begin with, we're going to start talking about the National MS Society recommendations, and basically what they recommend is a low-fat, high-fiber diet, which basically means a general, heart-healthy, low-fat diet that we all read about and know about, I'm sure. And one thing I wanted to mention in the beginning, that on the Internet and on the computer, you can pretty much find anything nowadays, and most of the special diets that are correlated and about MS and nutrition are actually not very well documented. So there can be some claims that some really weird diets, weird supplements, weird herbal remedies might improve your symptoms or might, you know, hurt your symptoms or make them worse. So before you begin anything nutrition-wise or any supplements, make sure that you talk to your physician before. I just want to state that up front, because most of the special diets that are on the Internet are really just not very well documented, so there's not a lot of research backing up their overall success rate. There are a few things, however, that are true out there, and those are really what I want to talk about, and this is what the National MS Society focuses on the most. Back to the low-fat diet, there is some research that shows that a high-fat diet or a diet high in saturated fat can actually make your MS symptoms worse. And by saturated fat, what I mean is that's the type of fat that actually clogs your arteries, that can lead to, you know, a heart attack or a stroke. It increases your cholesterol. Saturated fat is always going to be on the food label. So that is something that you can find on every box of food, on, you know, any package of food, you can find out how much saturated fat is in a product. Some examples of foods that are high in saturated fats would be like your candy bars, a lot of your processed foods like Little Debbie's, Hostess, donuts, sweets, and also red meat, especially like steak, your higher fat meats, some of your roasts. All of those are going to be high in saturated fat. Those are the types of foods that you want to try to either limit or reduce in your diet to try to keep your MS symptoms in remission or feeling the best that you can. So that has a lot of documentation, is trying to go for a low-fat diet with low-fat cheese, low-fat dairy, low-fat animal products like chicken, fish, turkey, making sure that you grill and bake instead of frying your foods. That's going to reduce the amount of saturated fat in your diet as well. The other special diets that I wanted to talk about involve omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids. Diets high in these fatty acids have actually been shown to improve MS symptoms. I want to break it down for you and first talk about omega-3 fatty acids. Those are primarily found in fish, fatty fish like salmon, mackerel, swordfish. It's going to be in your fish oils, and that's why you want the fatty fish. It's a fatty acid, so you're going to want to look for a fatty fish like I mentioned before, like the salmon, the mackerel, the swordfish. Flax seeds, if anyone is familiar with them, they are very high in omega-3 fatty acids. And flax seeds, they're very easy to use, very easy to incorporate in your diet. You want to make sure that you buy them ground or else you grind them yourself. A lot of times stores will sell them whole, but they're only going to be beneficial if they're ground. So make sure that if you buy some flaxseed, either you buy it ground or you grind it yourself in a coffee grinder, you want to keep it in an airtight container and always keep it in the refrigerator. That's what's going to preserve it the longest. It has a little bit of a nutty flavor to it. So you can use 1 to 2 tablespoons a day of ground flaxseed, and you can sprinkle it on your cereal. You can put it in oatmeal. You can put it on a salad. You can stir it in yogurt. Those are just a few ways that you can use ground flaxseed. There's a lot of cereals out there, actually, that contain flaxseed. Some of the Kashi brands have started using flaxseed, and it's just a really heart-healthy fatty acid. It's also been shown to lower triglycerides in individuals and improve their overall heart health, reduce the risk for stroke, and improve their cholesterol. So that's the omega-3 fatty acids. Those are primarily going to be, like I said, in your fish oils and in your flaxseed. You might be aware that there are some fish oil supplements on the market that say they contain omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. Those do work well. They do. A lot of people claim that you sort of have a fishy taste after you eat them, since primarily that's where the majority of your omega-3 fatty acids are in your fish oils. So if you're interested in any of the fish oil supplementation, make sure you talk to your physician and get the recommended amount from them. But it is effective, and there are studies that show that they improve your overall MS symptoms. Then the other fatty acid that I mentioned previously was the omega-6 fatty acid. It kind of complements the omega-3 in improving your MS symptoms. And your omega-6 fatty acids are primarily found in safflower and sunflower oil. So some of your kernel oils contain a good source of omega-6 fatty acids. All of your olive oil, your canola oil, a lot of your nut oils, peanut oil, will be good sources of these fatty acids as well. So keep that in mind. When you're looking at the internet and when you're reading books and when you're doing research, if it sounds outlandish, then it probably is. You know, the National MS Society really recommends a heart-healthy, low-fat, high-fiber diet. There is good research showing that a diet high in omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, there is some symptom improvement. And then there's also some research, again, that a diet high in saturated fat can actually worsen your symptoms. I want to spend just a couple minutes on fiber, because MS Society really recommends a high-fiber diet. There's two different types of fiber, and again, fiber is always going to be found on your food label. So it's something that you can always find, and it's in bold. The two types of fiber are soluble fiber and insoluble fiber. The soluble fiber is actually what's touted the most for lowering cholesterol. It's the one that they kind of sing the praises in the oatmeal commercials and say that, you know, eat oatmeal for 20 days, your cholesterol goes down 20 points. That's your heart-healthy fiber. That's the soluble. And the daily recommendation for soluble fiber is going to be 3 grams a day. And you can get 1 gram from a bowl of oatmeal. You can get 1 gram of soluble fiber from a bowl of Cheerios. You can get soluble fiber from fiber supplements such as Metamucil or Benefiber, or, you know, any of the, you know, the fiber supplements out there usually contain 1 gram of soluble fiber. So that is going to be your heart healthy fiber. That's the soluble fiber. The other type of fiber is your insoluble. That's what's going to come from the peeling of your fruits and vegetables, whole wheat breads, whole grain foods. That's good for your intestinal health. You know, fiber is good for adding bulk to the stool, and if you drink and stay well hydrated with the proper amount of water, then it can really relieve constipation and any type of, you know, gastric issues. So the goal for fiber a day is actually your total fiber intake should be 25 to 35 grams a day. And just so you know, the average American gets between 10 to 12 grams of fiber a day. So it's really an area that, you know, we need to work on. We need to focus on high fiber foods. Look for the fruits and vegetables with the peelings. Look for high fiber cereals, look for whole wheat bread, whole grain foods. There's even products out there, you can get Pop-Tarts with fiber now. Fiber One is making Pop-Tarts, so it's really kind of hit the market as far as companies trying to make it easier for you to increase your fiber intake. And again, there's all the supplements, but I will just say one thing about fiber. If you think you have a low-fiber diet right now and you want to try to increase your fiber, you want to take it slowly, because if you all of a sudden decide tomorrow to eat 35 grams of fiber, whereas you normally have 5 grams, you will have a stomach ache. So make sure when you increase the fiber that you also increase the water in your diet, increase the fluids, just so you can kind of get adjusted to it. But since the National MS Society recommends a high-fiber diet, I wanted to touch on the two different kinds, where you can find what food sources are in those two different types of fiber, and how much you need of each of them. So, and there is one other little thing I will make a note of, and this is something to talk with your doctor about, because there's varying, you know, amounts of research out there, but I did run across some information regarding B12 supplementation, and there are a lot of individuals that get B12 shots, and that's fine, you know, when their doctors approve of it, but there's really not a lot of research that by getting them alone, it really improves your MS symptoms. So, you know, make sure if you're considering that or you've read about it that you do talk to your doctor about that, but there's not a lot of proven research out there that the B12 supplementation on its own actually improves your MS symptoms. There are some other conditions where you definitely need it, but MS is not one of those that there's been a tremendous amount of improvement in the symptoms in. And then the second point of tonight that I did want to talk about was osteoporosis. I wanted to talk about this briefly because osteoporosis is actually pretty prevalent in the MS population. A lot of that's due to taking steroids and corticosteroids and the way that those medicines and medications affect your bones and your bone density. Osteoporosis is a condition where you lose bone mass and you lose it over time, and your bones eventually become a little bit softer, which there's kind of an in-between stage called osteopenia, which is actually not full-blown osteoporosis, but there is a softening of the bones beginning to occur. And then that can lead to osteoporosis, which is just very brittle, very porous bones that are easily fractured and easily broken. For those individuals with low bone density or with osteopenia or osteoporosis, there are a lot of very effective medications that are out there that actually can build back some bone density, and they're very effective, and they've been much easier to take now over the last few years. And physical activity, any type of physical therapy, fall prevention, you know, reducing the hazards of falling and breaking a bone are very important to do. Any weight-bearing exercise, any time that you can lift weights, that you can put pressure on your bones, like walking or, you know, jogging, any time you can do any weight-bearing exercise, that's going to build your bone density. And especially strength training, because you're strengthening the muscles between your bones, so it makes them less resistant to breaking. So that's going to be an important part of the overall picture for reducing your risk for osteoporosis. But like I mentioned before, a lot of steroid medication over time can reduce your bone density. Other things that reduce your bone density are a decrease in either estrogen and or testosterone. So when a woman is going through menopause, the first 5 years after menopause can be the greatest amount of bone loss for a woman. So those first 5 years are critical to work with your physician as far as what you can do, nutrition, you know, physical activity, you know, what you can do to best preserve your bones, especially those first 5 years past menopause. That drop-off in estrogen is really when a lot of the bone loss can occur. So it's critical to make sure that during that window you're getting the proper milligrams of calcium and that you're getting the proper exercise. A low-calcium diet can contribute to osteoporosis. Smoking can contribute to osteoporosis. An excessive intake of alcohol can also contribute. And also, the people at risk the most are those that primarily females get osteoporosis more. People with a thin frame, small bones, Caucasian women are at a greater risk than African-American women. Those are going to kind of be the target population that you most likely see with osteoporosis. A family history can definitely contribute to osteoporosis, and it's just something that you want, even if you're, you know, 15, 20, 25, 30, it's never too late to start having a calcium-rich diet, and it's never too late to really try to reach your peak bone density, which is actually around the age of 30. Between 30 and 35 is really peak bone density, and after that, you know, you slowly begin to see a decrease. Calcium-rich foods, of course, are going to primarily be your dairy products. Your milk, there's not more calcium in whole milk than in skim milk. Every, you know, 1%, 2% skim milk, whole milk, one glass that all contains the same amount of calcium. There's not a difference in the amount of calcium. Organic milk contains the same amount of calcium as cow's milk. Soy milk also contains calcium. Calcium is also going to be found on the food label. And there's a real easy way to determine how many milligrams of calcium are in each food product is if you look at the food label and it says it's a slice of cheese and it says calcium, which will be abbreviated CA. If it says 15%, all you have to do is remove the percent sign and add a zero. So it would be 150 milligrams in each slice of cheese. The same goes for milk. It'll say CA, which stands for calcium, and it'll say 30% is in an 8-ounce glass of milk. So then, of course, you would remove the percent sign and add a zero. So an 8-ounce glass of milk would give you 300 milligrams of calcium. So you can do that for any food label. for calcium only. It doesn't work for the other nutrients that are listed on the label, but you can do that for calcium, and it can help you add up during the day, and you can see how well you're doing with your calcium-rich foods. Yogurt, cheese, broccoli is a good source. There's calcium-fortified bread. There is calcium-fortified orange juice. There are a lot of products out there that have been enriched with calcium. I want to go over the recommendations for calcium so that you can know how well you're doing. And really what I recommend is taking a 3 to 5 day diet record and adding up the milligrams of calcium that you think you get, you know, each day over a 3 to 5 day period. And if you're not reaching your goal, then supplementation may be something that you want to consider, and that's fine. I'll talk about the supplements real quick, actually, before I give you the recommendations. There's two main types of supplements. There's calcium carbonate and there's calcium citrate. The calcium citrate is actually, you know, a little bit more effective, a little bit better than the calcium carbonate. The type of calcium is going to be listed on the label. For instance, Tums. A lot of people take Tums for their stomach, and Tums is actually a good source of calcium. Tums is calcium carbonate. CitraCal, for example, will be calcium citrate. So it's on the label. There's two different kinds. They're both fine, but you know the calcium citrate is probably a little bit better absorbed. You want to make sure if you're taking a calcium supplement that you separate them out. If you're taking two, you want to make sure you take one in the morning, one in the evening. Your body can only absorb about 500 milligrams of calcium at a time. So that's the benefit of separating them out. You want to make sure you can maximize your absorption. And there's some Viactive. It's a little chocolate chew. They're a good source of calcium. There's lots of them out there, but just make sure you look at the type of calcium and then how many milligrams are in each tablet to see, you know, make sure that you're taking what you need. And lastly, I just want to finish up with the recommendations for calcium. For men and women aged 25 to 65, the recommendation is 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. So, you know, you can go back to the food labels, to the foods that you usually eat, total those up, see how well, if you're in this age bracket, that you come to reaching 1,000. If you generally eat 2 to 3 calcium-rich foods a day, you're probably going to be pretty close to 1,000 milligrams. So that's sort of a good rule of thumb. So if you can get in 3 calcium-rich foods, you're probably doing okay. If you are postmenopausal, if you are over 65 or you have, you know, a strong family history, you've already been shown that you've had some bone loss, the recommendation is going to be bumped up to 1,500 milligrams of calcium a day. We also want to make sure that we combine our calcium with vitamin D. The recommendations for vitamin D are between 400 to 800 IUs a day. If you take just a regular multivitamin, that will give you 400 IUs, so that's really sufficient. You know, if you take a multivitamin and you take calcium, you really don't need to take an additional vitamin D supplementation unless it's been recommended by your physician. So those are the things that I wanted to cover tonight. I wanted just to really talk about what the recommendations from the National MS Society are, and then also talk a little bit about osteoporosis, since that's a prevalent condition, and it is nutrition. There's a lot of nutrition component to osteoporosis. So at this time, Tom, if anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to take them. Thank you all very much for listening.
Hey, at this time, I would like to remind everyone that if you would like to ask a question, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. And we have our first question. Comes from Rita.
Yes. I just want to ask the gal who's been talking, what does she think about gluten-free foods for people with MS?
All right, Rita, I heard your question being, what did I think about gluten-free foods and as it relates to MS? And that's a very good question. For all those that are listening, gluten-free is, well, it's a diet that those with celiac disease actually follow. It's when the body cannot tolerate wheat and wheat-based products in their system, and it, you know, those individuals with celiac disease have to strictly follow a gluten-free diet. There are other, a lot of people follow a gluten-free diet just by choice. Now, I don't know a lot about how it relates to MS. I do know that, I mean, it's a perfectly healthy way to eat. Not, you know, there's nothing adverse that I've heard about, you know, following the gluten-free diet.
Okay.
Are you following a gluten-free diet?
No. My boyfriend, where he goes for exercise, the gentleman that's helping him with exercise, just recently has recommended him to start following this.
Oh, okay. It's a pretty extreme. I mean, like, it takes a lot of shopping around for gluten-free products and a lot of research, and it's kind of tough to eat in restaurants. But, I mean, it's definitely a doable, you know, diet, but it, you know.
Okay. I was just curious. Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Our next question comes from Sharon.
Yes?
Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. I've heard you talking about the importance of calcium. Can you tell me what someone in my situation would need to do? I am petite and small-boned and probably need to take calcium because I'm approaching 50. But I had a kidney stone several years ago, and my urologist recommended that I not take calcium. And I don't know what I need to do. Do you have any recommendations?
I run into that a lot. Thank you, Sharon. That's a good question. She was saying that her urologist had recommended that she not take calcium supplements. A lot of kidney stones are calcium, either calcium-based, or they come from too much calcium in your body. What I would recommend first is that you get a DEXA scan. Have you had one of those from your physician where they check your bone density?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, that's your first thing. Did it show that you had lost bone, or did it show that you were osteoporosis?
No, ma'am, it did not.
Okay. Probably what it showed then is that your bone density was, you know, very good right now, very sufficient. So you probably don't need to take any supplements. I would make sure that they repeat the bone density test at least every 2 to 5 years so that they can track your progress. If and when they started to see that you were beginning to lose bone, then it's something that you can revisit with your urologist and with your physician. But probably you primarily want to get your calcium from foods instead of supplements right now. But the good news is it doesn't really sound like that you need any supplements right now. So, you know, keep an eye on it. Like I said, every 2 to 5 years, make sure that they give you another bone scan, and make sure they catch it. You know, if they can catch it when you first start losing some bone mass, if that happens.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Here, our next question comes from Lynette, from Mary.
I just wanted to ask, I'm allergic to milk products, and I have MS, and I'm supposed to take it. Do I take more calcium pills for it, or can I make it up in some types of food?
All right, Mary, that's a good question. You know, Mary was saying that she is allergic to milk, and there are other alternatives to milk. There's soy milk. There's goat milk. The soy products are you know, full of calcium, just like cow's milk is. So if you've not tried the soy products, that's going to be your first place to start. There's soy cheese. There is soy yogurt. And like I said, there's soy milk. So you can get a lot of dietary sources of calcium through soy products. There's also the calcium-fortified orange juice, broccoli, any of your greens. Those are good sources of calcium. But you can, you can take a calcium supplement, and it will be almost as effective as a diet rich in calcium. So if you're not getting any dairy from any soy products or any calcium-fortified foods, then you probably are a good candidate for a supplement. And, you know, just make sure that you separate it out during the day, and, you know, that should work and help maintain your bone density just as well as a calcium.
Yes, well, I take 600 milligram of calcium of a morning and then in the evening.
That's great.
Do you think that's enough?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I do, but you may want to try some of the soy products, too.
Yeah, I might. I didn't know they had the cheese and the yogurt.
They do. You might have to look in, maybe the health food section or just the general section or maybe even with the organic foods.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Our next question comes from Sherry.
Hi. My phone hung up on me. How much calcium did you say the average female needs?
1,000 milligrams.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Bye-bye.
Our next question comes from Lynette.
Hello?
Hi.
I heard you talk about the omega-3s and the 6. I tried the 9, but it didn't work with me with all three of them. What is the 9 for, sister?
Omega 9?
Omega 9. They have it in the fish oil.
Now, I haven't read any research about the omega 9 being effective for reducing MS symptoms. It was only the omega 3 and the omega 6.
Okay, because they got a fish oil with all three of them in it. That's what I was asking.
So that made
my hair. So I just stopped taking them, period. So I just take the omega-3s.
Right. You can just take the omega-3s. That may be more for you. I mean, there's different, you know, some people respond to things that other people may not respond to. So, you know, if you want to give just the, maybe try the flaxseed.
Mm-hmm.
Or try just the omega-3. Or just try to incorporate some more, you know, more fish into your diet, you can see how that does.
Okay. I never tried the flaxseed. I ain't never tried that one.
Yeah, give that a try. Just make sure that it's ground and that you keep it in a tight container in the refrigerator so it contains, you know, it retains its potency.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Jesse.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I'm not too much of a seafood eater. I really don't eat seafood.
Okay.
So what about a fish oil or pill or whatever? Would that be sufficient right there?
It would be. It would be. It's basically the same as eating the fish. So the fish oil supplements are as effective as really, that type of seafood diet.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Laura.
Hi. I was curious about flaxseed. I believe it comes in an oil also.
It does come in an oil. It does. You can purchase flaxseed oil, and that's fine because it's basically the oils from the seeds is where you get the omega-3 fatty acids. That's why it's found in a lot of oils like safflower oil, sunflower oil, peanut oil, canola oil. So the flax oil is effective, and it's just fine.
Okay, and how much would you take of that?
Now, that's going to be something to ask ask your doctor about, because he's going to know any type of other, you know, maybe medications that you're on to make sure that it doesn't, you know, isn't contraindicated. So I really only know the recommendation for the flax seed, which is 1 to 2 tablespoons a day. I'm not 100% sure about the flax oil. You might could ask your pharmacist as well.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Valerie.
Yes, I just wanted to understand again about how much fiber. If I understood you correctly, you said 3 grams per day of soluble fiber. Hello?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
But then you said the total amount should be 25 to 30, so basically we're getting the insoluble and other things, and the wheat and grains and so forth.
Correct.
Okay. And
the American Heart Association recommends 3 grams of soluble fiber a day for optimal heart health.
Okay. And if I can also ask about the osteoporosis, because I have that, and some of the medications that you take or that are recommended, which are, and I just went blank on them, not the usual one, not the Beneva and those, I can't tolerate those
right
with my stomach. And there's like an infusion that's once a month, and then there's a daily injection. And some of the side effects of those are very similar to MS. So I'm wondering, you know, I guess that's something really to ask the doctor about, but, you know, how are you going to know, you know, if you're reacting to that or if it's an MS symptom?
That is a good question. I mean, because I have counseled a lot of individuals that cannot tolerate the medications that treat osteoporosis, that it, you know, really upsets their stomach and they just cannot tolerate them.
Right.
So the only, you know, one way to maybe know that your physician might could recommend is if you sort of take a, you know, a medication holiday or a medication vacation and then see if those symptoms are still present. You know, if your symptoms improve, then it could be related to the medication. If they stay the same or worsen, then it's probably not the medication that's, you know, contributing to the symptoms. But, you know, before you did anything like that, of course, you know, you might want to, well, you definitely need to talk to your physician. But that is one way that, you know, I have heard of some patients that they do.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to ask your physician about that possibly.
And also, one of the side effects is a problem with the jaw. I forgot the name of that, which can be serious. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not. I don't know about the one that, you know, all the side effects of the medication. I mean, probably a pharmacist or a physician is going to be best.
Right. So is there, I mean, is, have you heard of ways, if you've already got osteoporosis other than taking these medications, you know, adding the, you know, the calcium and weight training and that kind of thing, does that help at all, or pretty much you have to go with medications?
Oh, no. I mean, there's, you know, the medications in conjunction with the, you know, the physical activity and the calcium-rich diet, all those work in tandem to try to reach, you know, or try to achieve the most dense, I guess, that your bones can be. But, the weight-bearing exercise and the strength training is a very important component of it. And so is the calcium-rich diet. So it's not medication alone. I mean, it's a lot of pieces of the puzzle working together. So if there's no medications that you can tolerate, still do the strength training and the physical activity and the calcium-rich diet, then you're still far ahead of a lot of people that aren't doing any of that at all.
Okay, so it can help you maintain at least what you have left, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, you may not be able to build any back, but, I mean, a goal is not to lose any as well. So.
Right. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Barbara.
Hi, I guess that's me.
Okay.
Back on calcium, Do you have to take it with food, or can you just take the pill by itself if you happen to be, have a day where, you know, your meal schedule isn't working out right?
That's a good question. I'm asking about if you need to take the calcium with food or without food. The calcium carbonate is probably best absorbed on an empty stomach. The calcium citrate, you can...
Oh, wait a minute. Let me write this one down. I wasn't expecting a real answer. Okay, which one was that, the citrate?
The calcium carbonate...
Oh, carbonate.
...is most effective on an empty stomach.
On an empty stomach. Oh.
Calcium citrate, which is primarily what's in the majority of the supplements, can be taken with food or without food. It doesn't really matter.
With or without. So I don't have to worry if I forget it at my mealtime and just...
Exactly.
The other question I had, I'd heard recently that your pills should be separated by an 8-hour interval. Is 8 hours necessary, or can it be fewer than 8 hours? Because that's a long stretch. You know, my doctor has me taking 3 a day, and 3/8 are 24, you know, 24 hours in a day.
Right.
So I was wondering, is what do you know about that?
I mean, if you take one, you know, early breakfast morning, you take one, you know, with lunch, or early afternoon and one at bedtime, that's fine.
And so then if I don't have to worry about eating with it, I wouldn't have any trouble separating them. Oh, okay, this is great news. I appreciate it. Thank you.
We have our next question. It comes from Anna.
Hi there, how are you?
Hi.
I've been diagnosed with MS for like 18 years and a half. And right now I've been with a whole bunch of different injectables. I started off with beta serum. I got a blood clot in my leg and a whole bunch of different ones, right? But I ended up, my ex-husband used to give me all my shots, right? I got off that. I'm on Tysabri now. And it's going pretty fine, thanks to God. I was very scared because I heard a lot of bad things and stuff. But anyways, the thing is, I love ice cream. I love food. And I've gained a lot of weight after my divorce and stuff. And now my cholesterol is super high. I've gained a lot of weight. What do I do? What do I eat instead of ice cream, instead of sweets?
Hey, so were you asking about the cholesterol and how you like sweets?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, you're not alone. A lot of people like sweets, and a lot of people, you know, eat that way. And, you know, kind of what I went back to at the beginning, you know, with the high saturated fat diet, which isn't a lot of sweets, I mean, if that's, you know, a weakness of yours, then you're going to want to, you know, try to look for the lower fat options, you know, like a reduced fat ice cream or maybe a sorbet or...
So, like, let's say if I buy ice cream that's no sugar added, is that okay or...
That's okay, but, you know, if you're eating it like a low-fat yogurt or sorbet, there's going to be a lot less fat. You know, that does have less sugar, so that's good. But for your cholesterol, I mean, cholesterol is only found in animal foods, so if you really reduce or cut back a lot of the meats and a lot of the...
junk foods, like McDonald's, Burger King, and stuff, huh?
Right. Exactly. That's a high saturated fat diet. And we're like we all are. I mean, we all know what we should do. It's just doing it that's hard on a consistent basis. And really, you know, it's sort of like we try to do the best the best we can when we can. We can't always be healthy, wonderful, perfect eaters, but we don't need to always be just, you know, consuming unhealthy foods as well. We need to try to find a balance in there. So I guess for ice cream, maybe eat some broccoli, see how that works.
And freeze it, so I'll think it's ice cream, right? Happy New Year, babe. Thank you so much, okay?
Uh-huh, thank you. Happy New Year.
Our next question comes from Debbie.
Hi. I was wondering what you think of grapeseed oil for the control of inflammation as it relates to MS.
A grapefruit?
Grapeseed.
A grapeseed oil.
Grapeseed, I'm sorry, grapeseed extract.
I haven't read anything about that for reducing inflammation.
Right.
Take it in a, is it like a capsule?
A capsule. Mm-hmm.
Improvement in it, or is this something that you do?
Yes, but it's a capsule.
Huh? And it works on the skin?
They say it's good for controlling or reducing the inflammation like that MS sufferers have in the brain if you have it there.
Okay, okay. And, I mean, it probably is like a dermatologist. You know, Heather here says that you can actually rub it on your skin for, like, reducing rosacea, which is actually an inflammation of blood vessels, you know, in your face or on your skin.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if it's effective for that, then it probably is a good anti-inflammatory extract.
Okay.
That's a good.
I've been taking it for a couple months now in conjunction with steroid treatment.
Okay.
I haven't had a flare-up, but just want to, you know, make sure it's actually doing what it's supposed to.
Sounds like it. It sounds like it. I mean, it's, you know, that's a good, I'm going to read a little bit more about that, but there is some anti-inflammatory qualities in that, so it's probably working well for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Beverly.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks, April, for taking your time out to do this because I'm really excited about nutrition and MS. They said I've had MS for 5 years now, and I have opted not to be on medication, and so nutrition has been my answer to the for my health, and I'm doing very, very well. My question is, how come the National Multiple Sclerosis Society isn't doing more stuff like this? Because food is medicine, and the more people are educated to understand the importance of putting fruits and vegetables in their system, I just applaud what you're doing. So why can't we do more of these and educate people better? Or why can't our doctors do that? Because my doctor never asked me about what I eat.
Yeah, well, a lot of the doctors, they get like a brief, you know, 6-week overview of nutrition in medical school. So that's what, you know, dietitians and doctors are, you know, everybody has their area of, you know, expertise or knowledge. Some doctors are more, you know, nutritionally, I guess, attuned or, you know, well-versed, and some are just going to kind of give you a handout that, you know, gives you basic recommendations. I mean, as far as these kind of, you know, programs, I don't know, Heather, do you want to address that? I mean, as far as trying to have more of them or address nutrition more?
We definitely hope to. It's kind of a place that we've gone with our programs in the last year or so is the whole theme of wellness, because, you know, we feel like you have enough interaction with your physicians and, you know, hearing about different, you know, injections or infusions, that we want to, you know, help you with other things that can be done to enrich your life, such as the nutrition, such as information on exercise, things that complement what you are doing clinically to help your MS. But at the same time, while we totally, you know, support any type of complementary therapy, we do say that you should run that by your physician, as they know you and your body better than we do. We also stand firm that, you know, we support people being on these platform therapies, you know, just based upon the fact that we know through FDA testing that they do work, whereas some of these complementary therapies and, you know, various diets, various supplements, some work for some and some do not work for some. We recommend the things that we know across the board work. So that's not ever going to change from a society standpoint. We will always back these, you know, injections. However, we definitely in the future, as with this teleconference, want to take strides to let you know about all the things that you can do to achieve whole body wellness, not just your medicine, but through your nutrition, your exercise, your daily living.
So how come no one has asked me about my holistic approach to MS? That's, I guess that's what I'm not understanding. Nobody wants to study me a healthy person, not doing all those medications. I understand complementary is where we go. My doctors have agreed. We've agreed to disagree. But I'm just really in awe at the lack of education on nutrition for MS patients, because it really is the key.
It's key. It is.
It doesn't matter how much drugs you take. If you're not going to eat properly, you're still going to decline and get worse.
But that's an overall thing that has zero to do with MS. That's for any condition possible. If you eat badly, you will feel it. MS, no MS. Heart disease, no heart disease. That's the basic. That isn't specific to this particular condition. And while I completely understand that if you've found, you know, a treatment, so to speak, that works for you, you know, that is absolutely, you know, wonderful. But your doctor isn't in the type of business to ask to study you in your holistic approach. He's a clinician. He prescribes you a medicine. If that's not, if you're not receiving the care that you hope to receive from your physician, neurologist, whatever his particular specialty might be, find someone who does suit your needs. You should be getting the most out of each of these visits, I mean, especially since you're paying for it.
No, I don't bother anymore. I'm healthy, so no purpose to tell them I feel good.
Well, great. Well, I hope you continue to feel healthy. Thank you for listening tonight.
Thank you.
We have our next question. Comes from David.
Hey, April, how you doing?
I'm fine, David. How are you?
Great. I just want to thank you again for all that you're doing, all this helping all the MS people. I've had MS for about 20 years, and I've tried just about every diet in the world. I wanted to give some encouragement to the lady that talked about going on the gluten-free. I've been doing that for about 5 years, and I really feel pretty good on that. I don't drink any milk products anymore. I drink goat milk. I eat goat cheese. I eat goat yogurt. And that seems to be a pretty good deal with this gluten-free and doing the goat milk business. And I've also been taking that grapeseed extract and some other things like that that are anti-inflammatory and antioxidant type things. That one lady was talking about the ice cream. I can sympathize with her. I eat goat milk ice cream every once in a while. But they do have some pretty good cookies out there that are sugar-free and gluten-free. And if that'll satisfy your sweet tooth, she might try that too. And the lady that has the osteoporosis, you know, she, as much as she can do with the exercise, and a lot of people have MS, can't really get too physical with things, but the weight-bearing or doing any kind of weight exercise, you well know, that really helps the osteoporosis as much as anything else. But one question I did have for you was on this, you know, taking some of the fish oil things. And there's been a lot about that recently about, you know, some of these fish oils aren't all that pure, and you might be getting other things like mercury, which some people think, you know, isn't all that great for people who have MS. But recently they've come out, people say that you should be taking this krill oil. Do you know anything about that?
How do you spell that?
It's K-R-I-L-L, and it's supposed to be have a lot more omega-3 in it than some of the other fish oils.
I don't know, but you know, if the percentage of omega-3 is higher than some of the other fish oils, then it, you know, it probably has a greater anti-inflammatory effect than,
yeah,
you know, those with the, you know, just the plain omega-3 fatty acid supplements, because basically your, you know, your fish oils and your fish oil supplements, they work in an anti-inflammatory.
Exactly.
You know, just like, you know, the whole gluten-free thing is, I mean, celiac disease and some of the conditions where people follow that diet, they have a lot of inflammatory markers in their body. So the,
yes.
So the whole overall gluten-free, I mean, it's an anti-inflammatory, you know, trying not to have any of those inflammatory markers rear their ugly heads, you know, in your body. But the krill oil, I mean, I can't say specifically
about it, but if it, you know, if it's a greater percentage of omega-3 fatty acids, then
supposedly, but you might check that out. It's been around for a little while, and I'm switching over on it now instead of taking the fish oil.
Okay.
Because, like you say, you get that aftertaste every once in a while. It's not that pleasant.
Oh, I know. I agree. Well, yeah, give it a try. You know, you can talk to your pharmacist and see if they know, you know, if the
right
composition is, you know, kind of what the composition of it is.
Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your comments.
We have our next question comes from Virginia.
Beverly? April?
Yes?
I would just like to thank you for all the good information that you've given people that's been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. My question is to you, all the information that you've given really says to me that you recommend a diet that is low in saturated fat, and that we should take supplements for our diet to get the omega-3 and the vitamin B and the vitamin D and all that. Are you saying that we should take mostly supplements?
That's a good question. I always say, from a nutrition standpoint, food first, supplement second. Food is always first. You know, that's why the, you know, the calcium-rich foods that I mentioned, I mean, that's going to be your, that's where you want to start. You want to start with a calcium-rich diet. If you cannot tolerate it, if you have allergies, if you have, you know, aversions or different things, then you can look at a supplement to make up the difference. But it's always going to be food first. As far as the fish oils go, really, to see the greatest anti-inflammatory benefit, I mean, you would have to eat a lot of fish a week. And some, you know, a lot of people, that's really not a reality. So they can do the fish, do the flaxseed, do the oils in their diet. But a lot of times it's at that supplementation level where you see the greatest anti-inflammatory impact. So I'm not really, you know, advocating in supplements. It's just that that's sort of what the research is showing. But, no, definitely. I mean, I'm a food first person for sure. That's a good question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
We have our next question. Comes from Robert.
Hello, April.
Robert.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm asking about, and I feel like I'm along the same lines that everybody else is asking. I want to ask about, I try to keep my weight down, and it was recommended that I start taking some apple cider vinegar along with some honey. Is that something you're familiar with, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay. I do have a comment from Heather that she said that the apple cider vinegar in the morning is supposed to kickstart your metabolism.
Yes.
So, you know, with weight loss, you know, any type of increase in your metabolism can help aid in weight loss, just like, you know, exercising, building muscle mass. The more muscle mass that you have, the higher your metabolism is going to be. So that could be why.
Do you find that the apple cider vinegar, is it helping you? Have you
seen I'm just starting to, you know, get into that, so I couldn't say, but.
Okay,
because several people have told me that's a good thing to do. It'll help get your middle weight down.
Definitely. I've heard people say that it definitely helps. However, it is vinegar. It does not taste good. And so if you can stick with it.
Yeah, that's what they said about that. That's
but
what
I have heard that some people very much like that. People also, if you're kind of a morning person, kind of want to kickstart your metabolism, you can put ground cinnamon in your coffee, and it'll do the same thing, and it doesn't taste nearly as gross.
Oh, good. Thank you.
We have our next question. Comes from Dennis.
Hi, Dennis.
Okay, Dennis, your line is open for a question. Okay, we'll move on to our next question. Our next question comes from Teresa.
Hey,
Teresa.
Hello.
Hi, Teresa, your line is open for
questions. Yes, I'm right here. I would like to ask a question. I have MS, and I would like to know, they talk about, like, you know, your bones, density, but do you ever talk about the nervous system? Because it affected me and my nervous system. And I was told that B12 might help, and I would like to know, what would you suggest as far as the nerve strengthening the nervous system, so that it has some damage done after a relapse?
All right, Neil. I mean, the nervous system is different area than nutrition for sure. So, I mean, dealing with the nervous system is something for a neurologist or for your physician. Now, the B12, if you are deficient in B12, there can be some impairment in your memory and in your brain function. So that's why if you are deficient in B12, that's where foods like your meats and your eggs and, you know, the B12 shots that they give, that can improve your cognitive status. So that may be where you're coming from. As far as, you know, the nervous system, I mean, those are going to be questions probably more for your physician than for a dietitian.
Oh, okay. I just want to know what I would take to strengthen the nervous system.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
We have our next question. Comes from Dennis.
Okay. I think you're talking about me. My name is Kenneth. The reason I didn't answer the first time.
Okay, Kenneth.
Yes, yes. I want to ask a question for my inquiring mind here. I'm looking at the paperwork for you, and there's some initials behind your name that I'm not familiar with.
Okay.
It says MS, RD, LD.
All right, I can tell you what those are. The MS is for Masters of Science.
Okay.
The RD stands for Registered Dietitian.
Okay.
LD stands for Licensed Dietitian.
Oh, okay. Now I feel enlightened now.
Okay.
All right, thank you. And I do appreciate the information that you're giving out, because I learned something on that flaxseed about getting it ground up.
Okay, well, good. Well, thanks for listening tonight.
All right, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
We have our next question. Comes from Michael.
Hello, is this?
Hey, Michael.
Yes, ma'am. A couple of odd comments and question on that. I was understanding from one of the support group meetings I went to, being seen by a physical therapist in the headings up, that the weight-bearing exercise should be not done, as it had the possibility of destroying muscle more than it would build it with the MS. And that's kind of got me a little confused about how best to build my body and bones up. I think that's a good first question.
Okay. Now, you know, I don't know about that. You know, everything that, you know, I've read is that, you know, weight-bearing exercise is good for retaining strength and building your strength. Now, I'm not a physical therapist, and, you know, I'm not an occupational therapist, so, you know, every case is individual. I'm not sure, you know, maybe if there's any reasons why you should or shouldn't, but, you know, I haven't really heard that it's been, you know, deterred to exercise.
Well, thank you for that. That really opens up more chances of getting up and playing with my two little ones and doing more of that kind of stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
I have been holding off doing for more than a year thinking I was going to tear my body apart.
Most of the time, physical activity and rehabilitation is encouraged. That's a good component of, you know, successfully treating MS.
And again, thank you so much for your time and information and all this.
No problem.
We have our next question comes from Debbie.
Hi, this isn't Debbie. This is Debbie's mom, Rita.
Okay.
I'm the caretaker of Debbie. I read where fresh pineapple is good for inflammation. Is that true?
It is. Pineapple does have some anti-inflammatory characteristics. It's high in antioxidants.
Oh, great. And the other thing I wanted to ask, if I were to make something with artificial sugar like Splenda or something like that, like an oatmeal cookie, just something for a treat, is that okay using the artificial sugars?
It is.
It is.
All of that in moderation is fine. That's a good substitute.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, because being a caregiver, doing the cooking, you never quite know the right thing.
I know, but Splenda's good for baking, so if you want to bake, I recommend Splenda.
Okay, thank you so very much, and thanks for all you do.
No problem. Thank you. Take care.
Have a great night and a good new year. Bye-bye.
We have our next question. Comes from Jesse.
Hello. My question corresponds with another lady's question. Really, I take about 6 or 7 different pills. I don't really take ABCR drugs anymore. I've had MS since 1990. I was diagnosed in 1990. And the pills, what I said before about the fish oil pills, that'll be added on to what I take before. But, see, I take everything at one time. Is that good or bad?
Really, it's the calcium that needs to be separated. If you're taking, you know, more than one fish oil supplement, I would separate those.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, I don't know all the things that you're on, but I know as far as calcium and the fish oils, I mean, I would separate those.
Okay. I've got the list in front of me, but do you have time for me to call them out all? Call of them out?
I think probably not tonight, but run that list past your pharmacist and ask them
okay.
if there's, you know, sometimes different medicines taken at the same time can interact or interfere with each other. So take
okay.
your list of, you know, supplements and medications and say, like, hey, can I take all of these at the same time or should I separate some of them? But from a nutritional standpoint, I would separate the calcium and the fish oil, but I probably can't comment on the other ones. You know, if they're not
okay. Okay, I appreciate it, and thank you for putting your expertise into helping us out.
No problem.
Okay, and I'm showing that there are no more questions at this time.
Hey, Tom? That sounds great. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Great. And once again, I would like to thank everyone for attending this evening's teleconference.
Bye. Thank you. Thanks, Tom.